Accession number 19772, Reel 1.
Jim Ferron, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In New Ferry.
Which year was this?
1932.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in New Ferry?
I did.
And how old were you when you left school?
During the holidays, I was 14. And then I started work with the post office 2 days after my 14th birthday, and that was the 26th of August, 1946.
So you spent the war years in New Ferry?
I did.
Have you got any recollections of the Second World War?
There was a lot of bombing in New Ferry, which seemed to be miles away from where I lived, when actually, as the crow flies, the nearest bomb was 50 yards or 150 yards, another one. And then on the other side of the house, there were two landmines landed about 150 yards away, near the river.
Do you know the names of the streets, where they fell?
The Mayfields in New Ferry, the two landmines fell there. There was a direct hit on the house in Port Sunlight in Boundary Road. And the Boundary Road was the boundary between Port Sunlight and New Ferry. There was a direct hit on one of the corner houses. The family's name was Brooks, and the mother was killed, and the daughter went to the same school as I did. And there was more bombing in the Town Lane area of Bebbington, and Rosina Mason was in our class, and her mother was killed when the house was bombed. I remember being ill off school, and there's a bit of a dog fight. I still don't know the type of planes. There was a plane come across over New Ferry from the Liverpool side of the river, but it was low. It's a German, followed by a British plane. And the wreckage finished up near the cemetery in Bebbington. And the air crew was taken to a police station that was in New Ferry at the time. Saw them being walked in, they weren't marched. Or,
you know, what was their attitude? What did they look like?
Well, I was only about 7 or 8. It was just a novelty to us. I know the wreck of the plane had an awful smell about it. Apparently, camouflage paint or what it was, but it was a smell. Not a nasty smell, but just something different.
Did the bombing worry you as a boy?
Not particularly. There was always the family around, so nothing was going to happen to me while the family was there, sort of thing. You know, as a child, you either cry about it or you say, well, it's going to happen anyway. When the bombing first started, we didn't have area shelters to go to. We had two tables in what we call the kitchen, which I suppose would be the living room. We put the two tables together and the family got under there to start with. Later, we had a brick-built area shelter outside the back door between Boundary Road and the road I lived in, Woodhead Street. And we stayed there. My dad was alone to himself. He stayed in bed. He never went anywhere. Later, when the bombing got heavier. It seemed to be three Thursday nights consecutive. He got up and he went out. Basically to see if he could help the victims. The landmines landed, say, 100, 150 yards away as the crow flies. And all the windows were shattered in a house. In houses, except ours. And when the last landmine dropped, our windows weren't the same as everybody else. But until then, we hadn't got a crack then. We used to put sticky tape across the windows. You may have seen it in old films. It's just that if there is a blast, the glass doesn't travel anywhere. It stays where it is.
So, did you suffer from any shortages in the Second World War?
We did. I didn't know it at the time. We had simple food. A lot of the people who were poor, we were a big family, and most of them were working anyway, so I don't know what money was coming into the house. But stuff was rationed. My dad was a manual worker, and he worked very hard. He was what's called a coal heaver. He worked on the docks, but shoveling coal out of holes, as opposed to being craned out. So any food that was available, any nutritious food, was his. We'd have scouse, which is a stew with as much meat as you could gather to put in it, but it's mainly potatoes and veg and things. And I don't think I tasted cheese till I was about 14, because it was all rationed. It didn't occur to me at the time. I wasn't deprived of anything. I had three meals a day of some sort. But say, a lot of the poor people had bread and milk. Well, we had the same thing, but ours was made with tea and not milk. That's the way we were brought up. And it wasn't a problem. I liked it. Still eat it occasionally now for something to do.
You mean bread dipped in milk?
Yeah, that's the way most people had it. I know I was ill at one stage, and I must have been undernourished without knowing it. Because after the doctor had gone, I was eating cornflakes for a few days. So that must have been a recommendation. I don't even know what the illness was, but I was off school for about 6 weeks. At GM and measles later. I had to live with that during the war, but going to school. But, I don't know what the illness was, but I was in bed. I wasn't in hospital, I was in bed for 6 weeks off school. That's when I saw this plane come over, or the two planes come over.
Were there any celebrations in New Ferry at the end of the war?
It was a street party. Yeah. And people seemed to find things to put on the tables. I mean, none of us starved. There was always something. Bread was reasonably plentiful. Potatoes were cheap to what they are today.
Were there any troops or other servicemen around in New Ferry during the war?
My eldest brother joined the Irish Guards in 1936. He signed for 4 years and ate on the reserve. And the war came. So he finished up doing near enough 10. He was in the Irish Guards prior to the war. He spent a little bit of time in France. He was caught up in the evacuation of Dunkirk. And he got away from there, still in the army. And I'm not sure whether he was in North Africa fighting or whether he was just there prior to the landing in Sicily. He went there. Then he invaded Italy. And one of the patrols they sent out was missing one night, so he had to go on a patrol to find them. And he got captured. So he spent, well, virtually the rest of the war in Stalag Luft 4B. I think it was in Germany, because he did get letters out from there. But when they were liberated by the Russians. So whichever way they were coming in to Germany, they just woke up one morning and there was a load of Russian soldiers around them. And then he did about 6 weeks just hiking around Germany before he actually got back to Britain. We knew he was released, but we never heard a thing from him for 6 weeks. Then he eventually got back to us.
Now, can you tell me about how you came to be in the army yourself, please?
Well, it's National Service. And with hindsight, I'd have gone into one of the corps. My eldest brother, as I say, was in the Irish Guards. My second brother was 3 years older than I was. And he went in the Loyalty, which is another infantry regiment. So when I went to register for National Service, I just put the infantry, basically. You know. Whereas I was a postman before I went into the National Service. So I should have gone into the Royal Engineers. But I went into the Army at the beginning of December, and I thought, if they're going to put me in the post office in the Army, I'm going to send all the wrong mail to everywhere because I'm not going to know the ropes for a few weeks. So I just put down for the infantry and did my basic training at Chester, a place called Satan Camp. And then we were allocated a regiment.
What was the basic training like?
The basic training was initially a shock. I wasn't a rebel as such, but I was single-minded in, you know, what I wanted to do, and they were virtually telling me that I had to do what they wanted me to do. And there was no cruelty or bullying or anything, it was just discipline, which we come to accept.
Do you know when about approximately you were at Chester doing this training?
The 7th of December 1950 I started it, and then it should have been 6 weeks training, but with Christmas and New Year coming in, a lot of the staff the permanent staff were on leave. So instead of 6 weeks training, they said you'd be doing 10 weeks training. And then I was put into the King's Own Royal Regiment, and we went down to Bulford on the Salisbury Plain. I was then made a machine gunner. Well, they tried to make me a machine gunner. But a lot of the actual training was split up between learning the machine gun and all its faults and virtues, and trying to make gardens out of the chalk around the barracks at Bulford. The food wasn't three meals a day as such. We had a breakfast and then we did training. And then they had something called tiffin, which is a light snack instead of a main meal at lunchtime. And then the main meal was about six or half past six at night. I'm not sure the actual times, but it seemed a long time between breakfast and tea with just tiffin. So, on 4 shillings a day. I didn't smoke or drink, but spent the rest of the time on chocolate. there was a stage when on muster parade they'd have a look, inspect the first rank on parade and call them all to attention. The sergeant would say to the corporal, march him down to get a haircut. So we had three haircuts a week for a while, for which we had to pay sixpence. So this is at about 4 shilling a day. I think I might have signed on in the army if there hadn't been national service. They're probably influenced by my brother, the eldest one. And they came round one day and said they needed volunteers to go to Korea. They didn't say who they were going with, they just volunteers to go to Korea. And I volunteered for everything at the time. But basically it was there to get a meal, when I was due for a meal. Most of the platoon, I suppose most of the regiment volunteered, but I can only speak for our billet. And they said you had to be 19 by a certain date, October or November. This was around about the middle of 51. And a lot of us put our hands up. He said you had to be 19 by a certain date in October. So a few hands went down. And you had to have 12 months to do by the same date. So a few more hands went down. And then medically you had to be FE, which I was told meant fit for Far East, but I don't know. But FE was the medical term that we had to be. So inside the army paybook, it had your medical condition on there. So if you weren't FE, you only got a home posting, which around about the time was Cyprus or Germany. I think FE meant Malaya or Korea at the time. And we were taken on to go to Korea, and it turned out to be the Welsh Regiment, which nobody had ever heard of. They'd heard of the South Wales Borderers, they'd heard of the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, but this was a Cardiff Regiment, which was being reformed to full strength. It did exist, but it only existed in nominal numbers, sort of thing. And we went from Bulford to Colchester, and they took our paybooks from us, and they brought them back later the same day, and they said, you've had no leave, which we hadn't from Bulford. We'd have 48 hour passes, but we'd never had any leave since we'd been in the army. So they gave us 10 days leave, what we were entitled to from the King's Arm. And then we came back, and then we went up to, after a few days, we went to Norfolk for intensive training for Korea. And we came back from there, and then we got a fortnight's embarkation leave. And then we actually came back and went to Southampton after a few days.
Could you tell me about the training in Norfolk, please?
I was a machine gunner, and I wasn't a particularly top machine gunner in the King's Arm. But when I went to the Welsh Regiment, and we did a little bit of basic training on the machine guns with them, a bit of gun drill, and I seemed to know more than the man who was the number one on the gun. It was a Birkenhead lad called Dixon, and his sergeant put me number one, and him number two. And Norfolk is basically like our scheme, it's a training area for most infantry, and the tank range and everything, around the Stamford area. And basically, it's just learning how to rough it, something like a 12-mile march in 3 hours. We did it in 2 hours and 20 minutes, and we thought, well, that's it, we've got some midnight now. But they might have started digging in straight away. So it was a scheme, and we were in a position, and there was all sorts of manoeuvres supposed to be going on around us, but a machine gun is static. You don't get up and run with it, you stay there. And if people want support, if they're 1,000 yards away, they want machine gun fire 2,000 yards away, over the heads. Basically to clear the ground for any patrols that are going through. And we didn't really come face to face with anyone, but the training at Norfolk was to acclimatise us to whatever's likely to happen. And discipline became like friendship and reliability with the people around you. In basic training, discipline means cleaning your shoes and blanking your belt, but there it means knowing that people are relying on you and you're relying on other people. And that's basically a bit vague, but that's what it was. It's just acclimatising yourself to the conditions.
What kind of machine gun was it?
It was a Vickers 303 machine gun, which they used in Khyber Pass and things like that. It's now obsolete, but it was a good weapon, a good reliable weapon. And although we were infantry, we were carried around in vehicles with the gun. Didn't do many marches carrying the gun. The gun weighed 40 pounds when it was there. It was water cooled. It weighed 40 pounds. And the tripod weighed 50 pounds. And the ammunition came in belts, instead of 250 in a belt, instead of a clip, so we had to carry a lot of those around.
And after Norfolk?
So we came back to Colchester, where the Welsh were based at the time. And then we got the embarkation leave. And we were fortnight's leave. And a few days after, we went down to Southampton to get the boat, which is the Empire Fowey. Previously a German ship, recaptured and used as a troop ship.
What were conditions like in the ship?
We didn't expect too much of being in the army, but it was the sort of thing, the Empire Fowey seemed to be rocking as it was tied up on the quayside, and it was one of those things that it seemed to rock all the way out. It took a month to get out to Korea. We had shore leave at Aden, Singapore, and Hong Kong. Well, it's Kowloon. We walked around. I thought it was Hong Kong, but apparently it was wrong. We had to get the ferry to Hong Kong. Main thing I remember about the Fowey was the food, which the main meal was the Russian salad, which consisted a lot of beetroot and other things thrown in, but beetroot was the basic diet on it. I say, being in the army, there's no choice of food. You got it, you ate it, or you left it.
So was it a miserable journey for you?
We did a bit of training on the ship as well. We had to basically keep fit and gun drill. We got the guns out of the hold and just running forward, setting the gun up, loading, unloading, running back again. It was to keep us occupied. it wasn't, couldn't have learnt any more, we're already on the way out there, so if we weren't ready for what we were going to do, we wouldn't have been ready anyway. So it's basically to, each unit I've been in, never seems to let you have time to yourself. If there's a day when nothing's happened, they'll find something for you to do.
What did you sleep in the show?
In a hammock.
Did
I was
that
good.
That was, all right?
I was good, yeah. I cut me back on my locker. It was only about a foot square, and I kept stuff in there. And I was kneeling down to get something out of my locker. And in the meantime, somebody opened the locker above me, and I was only wearing a pair of shorts. And as I stood up, the corner of the other locker dug into me back. I was scared for a while, but I think it's well gone now.
Did you get some treatment for that?
No, it's, it wasn't worth bothering with. It hurt at the time, but, say, being in the army, I was quite gullible, if you like. I mean, the teenagers now know more about what goes on in the world than I did at the time there. So it was my problem, it wasn't the army's problem, sort of thing. And, say, like the air raids, if you had somebody around you, you went alone with the problem, sort of thing.
Before you went, had you been following what was happening in the Korean War?
No, not specifically.
So where did you finally arrive?
It took about a month, maybe a couple of days over. And we got there early November. And then we docked at Busan. There's an American army band playing "So Long, It's Been Good to Know You." And there were two hospital ships in the harbour. And one was the Repose, I think. And the other, I think the other one was Consolation. It was something yucky. Names for ships, you know, but they were hospital ships, and I suppose they were named to conform with the job they were doing.
Do you know which month you arrived in Busan?
I think it was November.
51?
Yeah. And we were marshalled onto a train. And that was travelling all night from Busan to Seoul and beyond, I suppose. We'd go for half an hour, and we'd come into a station, and we'd reverse out of the station, and then we'd go somewhere else. And it's quite a messy, uncomfortable journey. We didn't know whether we were treated badly or not, because we were all in the same boat or the same train or whatever. It might have been for security, but they didn't have the train going.